Jacques Celier is the chairman of the Institute for Security Studies. He's a futurist by trade, I guess you could call it, and a very well-known author as well. He's going to be taking us through the latest work that they've done about South Africa's future, not just on the economy, but also on energy. Jacques, you must be in great demand nowadays. The geopolitics have become so front and center for anybody in any walk of life. It's not just the guys in politics. Now, if you're in business, you better know what's going on in geopolitics. Are you run off your feet?
Alec, I'm very, very busy. After I worked on peace and security for a few decades, I moved on to forecasting. And we run a very large website that looks at Africa's long-term future, but also how global developments impact on Africa. We call that Africa and the World. So spend a lot of time on reviews, presentations, and traveling. The world is changing, and nobody really knows where it's going, but we all try and frame our analysis. And of course, the next 2 weeks are going to be crucial when we see what's going to happen in the U.S. with the elections.
And of course, the BRICS meeting that's going down now and Putin bringing in North Korean troops to fight against the Ukrainians. It's just a crazy place we're living in. But let's come home, because this is a place we kind of can get our hands over, South Africa. You've done a lot of work in the last little while on South Africa for the next 20 years, which is a time frame that futurists would be looking at. Not the day-to-day, but the trends. Why do you do this? What is the motivation?
There are two motivations. The first, it's part of, that's my day job. In about 2022, June of 2022, President Ramaphosa launched a large website that we host in collaboration with the Africa Union Development Agency, NEPAD. They are the custodians of Agenda 2063, which is the long-term vision of the Africa Union. That vision was launched in 2013 and is being implemented in 10-year action plans. So 2023, 33, 43, 53, 63. We adopt our forecasting horizon for 2043 for all our work. And we forecast the long-term development of every African country, 54 of them. And we adopt a sectoral approach to that development. And once we've done that, this is a massive exercise. Once we've done that, we look at the impact of energy transition, climate change, how global developments impact on Africa. The result is this website that we host has got more than 4,000 charts on it and almost a million word of text. And we try and work with African governments to try and help them to look towards the future and what could unlock growth in their country. So what we did for South Africa is we undertook a very comprehensive update of work that I've done over many years. You may remember you were a great advocate of a book that I published many years ago, Fate of the Nation, which looked at South Africa's long-term prospects with various political and associated economic forecasts. So that's the second interest, apart from my day job of forecasting the long-term future of Africa and its constituent states. For example, we've just finished Mozambique. We're doing Egypt at the moment. We finished the East African community and so on and so forth. But also, of course, as a South African, as you are, we are all keen to see South Africa make progress. So spent a lot of time and in September completed our long-term forecast on South Africa's development prospects and how we see that unfolding over the next 20 years.
There have been a lot of plans about South Africa. The execution, however, seems to be awfully poor. Is there anything any hope you can give us that the plans, if you know where you're going and you know which path to take, it's one part of it, but to actually take that path rather than dilly-dally elsewhere is, I suppose, we know from experience in our country, an even bigger challenge.
And there's so many things I want to say and respond to that. I'll start with my favorite anecdote, which is that South Africa has, as you know, a national development plan, which President Zuma initiated But the main purpose of that plan, which has a time horizon till 2030, was not really to develop a long-term plan for South Africa. It was to find a way of moving Trevor Manuel out of the Minister of Finance portfolio. So we have a beautiful plan. It really was a comprehensive job. But of course, as we know, through poor governance, corruption, state capture, but then also unexpected developments outside of South Africa, COVID and so on. All these good intentions have come to nothing. And the one thing that the Ramaphosa administration has in spades are plans and compacts and intentions. Part of the update that we released for South Africa is we looked on each of eight sectors. We forecast eight sectors for South Africa. I'll maybe explain that in a minute. We looked at the plans and the strategies in these eight sectors. And of course, what we don't have is we don't have accountability. We don't have people being consequence management. And we have this tendency to shoot ourselves in the foot. Things have improved, however. I think there is real hope that the government of national unity allows a South Africa that will be able to stabilize. And I think the main finding of the research that we've released is first that it's going to take quite a while to recover to the damage that has been done. I mean, South Africa, we peaked in GDP per capita in 2013. On our current path forecast, that is our business as usual forecast, we only get to that back to the 2013 level in 2036. That's 23 years of going backward, in a sense, or sideways.
Dwell on that for a moment. GDP per capita, that means if you would take the total economic activity in a country divided by the number of people in the country, that'll give you GDP per capita. So it is probably the most important determinant of a nation's, is it becoming wealthier because of good policies or becoming poorer because of bad policies? 23 years.
And so we can improve.
It wasn't like in 2013 we were doing that great either.
No.
My word.
And of course, we haven't gone backward. We've gone sideways. We're getting close to it. Now, when we throw everything, including the kitchen sink at South Africa's development across these eight sectors that we model, we can bring that forward till 2030. But 2030 is still, firstly, a year beyond the 2029 elections. So from a political perspective, the most important message from our analysis is that the government of national unity, which has really got off to a very good start, and business and civil society and all thinking South Africans are behind that, needs to hold. And we need to build a centrist coalition in South Africa that is going to last for at least until 2034, which is the elections after 2029. Because the ANC has lost its majority. It may get a bit of a bounce back. I think Frans Grenier on your program indicated, and I think he's correct, that all parties within the GNU, but particularly the ANC and the DA, will probably get a bit of a bounce, probably the IFP as well. But none of them are going to get to 50%. I disagree with Frans that I think that the ANC is on a structural decline. I don't think that can be turned around. So they may get from 40 to 45% or whatever the case may be, but they will need a coalition partner. And we need to, what we need in South Africa is a centrist coalition, and the ANC, the DA, IFP bring different constituencies to South Africa. There is now for the first time, I think in two decades, real signs of progress that we can work ourselves out of this hole and that we can stop digging.
The risk, of course, is that the Government of National Unity does not deliver any improvement as far as the population are concerned, and that the radical parties gain greater momentum going into that election. And the point that you've made, even if you start now by making reforms, you're not going to see much until 2030. But surely there's got to be something that can be done. Maybe you could go a little micro now for us. If you were advising the government and saying, listen, Government of National Unity, you guys are politicians. You're going to lose power unless you take some risks. These are the risks that I suggest are worth taking. What would they be?
Alec, I think we've, in many avenues, we've all discussed the obvious low-hanging fruit. For example, the reforms that we see with the Ministry of Home Affairs is a easy one. These are policy changes that have almost immediate effect. The transitions that we need with regard to education and health are going to take much, much longer. But it's those investments, opening up Transnet, sorting the ports out, changing our orientation from a country that is quite hesitant to participate in global trade to really a country that is really prepared to seize any and all opportunities. That means we need to weigh our decisions with regard to investment and so on the basis of this. Does this advance South Africa's interest? I'll give you a good example of something that's happened in the last few days, which I think is just a sad reflection of decisions. So that is to move the Taiwanese representation out of Pretoria because of pressure from China. That is not necessary, firstly. Taiwan is quite a large investor in South Africa. The community is quite active, particularly low-end manufacturing. And that is an unnecessary decision to take at a time when what we should be doing is taking every effort to bring investment into the country. That's the kind of thing we should really avoid, because we need every friend we have got. Every decision that South Africa and the government takes has got to be weighed on, is this to our developmental benefit? Does this bring foreign direct investment? Does it bring stability? Will it enhance our growth? Our national interest is poverty alleviation, growing the economy, reducing inequality, and that requires economic growth. So amongst these eight sectors that we model, the one with a long-term future is growing the manufacturing sector. As we would all know, it grows jobs, it grows the formal sector, crowds in employment, reduces inequality, and so on and so forth. And the sector after that is free trade, particularly the full implementation of the continental free trade area, and then we get to better governance. And these three areas are the three areas that can really have significant advantage and bring significant benefit to South Africa. We have all the plans. But what we lack is consequence management and implementation. And there, the glue has gone off to a good start, but there are certain areas, let's take agriculture, which is very closely linked. If you want an agricultural revolution in South Africa, which is possible, you need to unlock agriculture in the former homelands. And there you bump up against traditional authority and all of those kind of issues. South Africa has... And we were quite surprised to the extent that the agricultural sector has got more growth potential than we ever imagined when we did our modeling. But to do that, you have to unlock agricultural potential, in other words, access to land, in other words, title deed in the former homelands. And that is politically a very, very short issue to do. But in the Eastern Cape, for example, significant agricultural potential. So that's an area where we were quite surprised by the potential that that South Africa has.
So it sounds like there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, but much of it is being kiboshed by political imperatives. I like the point that you make about putting South Africa first. It's almost as though this country lacks confidence. It's almost as though this country feels that we need ideology imposed on us by others, like the point you made about China and Taiwan, and that although we say all the right things, we're a non-aligned nation, we don't actually do all the right things. I would just imagine what would happen if Putin said, okay, all of us BRICS members must now go and fight in Ukraine. Not that he'd want our troops, they aren't that good, but if we were to send troops there, or to have that discussion even in Parliament about sending troops to Ukraine, like the North Koreans are doing under the lap, as it were, those would be clearly not in South Africa's interest, but it might be something that the politicians think is a good idea.
Now, we've been played by Russia, to a lesser extent China, for many, many years. Now, the BRICS partnership elevates South Africa in international standing. And we as a relatively small economy play in the big league. There are many benefits to being part of that grouping of countries. We are going to see much more rapid growth, but we need to balance our interests, and I don't think we generally do. Many of the problems, you also discussed this, is that we tend to think ideologically in South Africa, and we don't think practically. And we are all for evidence and for data and for a fairly hard-nosed assessment of what are South Africa's interests. So there are many, many areas in which we are not really non-aligned. Our orientation, that is fine, is much more an orientation. We are part of the global South, but our trade relations, our investment mostly comes from Europe and from the US. And they are important partners for South Africa. Although China, as a single country, is our largest trading partner, the EU, as a grouping, is much larger. We need to look, and the value is much higher. And Africa, Southern Africa, is our natural destination for exports and imports. That's where we need to focus on. We really need to focus on removing every obstacle to growth and take a much more econometrics approach to our governance and step away from the ideology and wanting to fight the global Cold War struggle, which many in the ANC unfortunately still think they're busy with.
Well, we don't really have the resources we're a tiny little player when it comes to those big forces. And the opportunity has to be huge to be able to play both sides. And that would be Ramaphosa's greatest strength, if you think he somehow does manage to get enemies to talk nicely to him. But before we finish off, what about energy? We've now gone more than 200 days of no load shedding. So suddenly, we aren't all worried about electricity as we were in the past, but there are still those imperatives of moving towards renewables because of the climate change fight. We're certainly seeing from the global south, they are telling the rest of the world, don't tell us to shut down our coal-fired power stations when you've done all the polluting and we're still a long way behind you. How's that all worked into your scenarios?
So, Alec, In your show notes, hopefully you will put a link to the forecast that we've done for South Africa, where we spend a lot of time on South Africa's energy transition, because obviously we need to get away from coal. It's in our interests. It's in our export interests. It is in the health of our citizenry and so on. So our forecast is that South Africa can get, to about 20%, 21% coal dependency by 2043. Now, we are at, well, depending how you do the figures, either 85 or 95% at the moment. And in the meanwhile, our economy is going to grow. So getting down to 21% of your energy production through coal is a massive. That means we achieve that by pushing the renewables up to 57%, by putting gas up to 19%, and nuclear up to 4.4%. These are all modeling that we did by firstly reducing South Africa's coal energy production in line with what Eskom has said. And then we say, okay, what is possible with renewables? And we use various forecasts that have appeared in the private sector to see how rapidly South Africa can get to renewables. Then we increase the nuclear bill. South Africa will have to go nuclear, depending, you can speak about what type of nuclear. But even once you've done those three things, you still are led with a demand gap, which we fill with gas, to simplify the modeling that we've done. So what we try and do, in line with the IRP 2019 and 2021, we try and ensure that South Africa's production meets its demand so that you are energy secure, and that you don't just export all the coal that you save from closing down various coal-fired plants. And that is going to require a huge transition in South Africa. But it's going to revolve around renewables, firstly, nuclear and gas. And unless there is very new technology that we don't know about at the moment, we can't get away from nuclear and gas, much as those are also problematic in each manner. But then South Africa can maintain its energy security and produce as much energy as it needs.
Yaki Zelia is the chairman of the Institute of Security Studies, and there's a heck of a lot more in the report that you can go to and get on the website. And I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.